It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 654 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week we chat with comics creator Snake about his upcoming work, The View of the Phoenix Trees, which is coming to Kickstarter soon. Snake is a writer and letterer who is a poet, a spoken word artist, and a comic creator who recently graduated with a Master of Fine Arts in Writing for Stage and Broadcast Media at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama. His book is described this way. The View of the Phoenix Trees is a beautifully drawn and written comic about an inspiring historic fantasy Vietnamese family struggle to stay together post-war. We discuss who the characters are, how this book came to be, and what we can expect from him in the coming months. Be sure to sign up to be notified when this crowdfunder launches in the near future by checking the link that's in the description of this podcast. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Snake is a poet, spoken word artist, comic creator, and letterer who graduated with a Master of Fine Arts in Writing for Stage and Broadcast Media at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama. He's worked in and out of the film and TV industry for the last 10 years. As a script reader, prop man, and PA, he now writes comics and letters them. And the book we're talking about, we're doing a pre-show for, it's called The View of the Phoenix Trees, and it's described as an inspiring historic fantasy story about a Vietnamese family struggle to stay together post-war. So how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Thank you very much for having me on and having a chat with me. Exciting.
It's good to talk with you. Of course, I always want to know how things got the way they are. So you go by Snake, but that's not, of course, your real name. Is that kind of your street name?
So just my writing pen name. I kind of moved to how best. Okay. So I did like a part-time shift at Wagamama's. It was just one shift, and I, cause it's really stressful actually working there as like a waiter anyway, but, there were two Scots and they just asked me, what do you want to be called? I'm a big, massive fan of Metal Gear Solid and Escape from New York. So I just went, well, you know, they didn't want me to call you, you know, we're not going to call you Scott 2. So what do you want? And I was like, call me Snake. And then it just kept popping up. I put it into chats. Like my WhatsApp group is just Snake. And then my ex-girlfriend was like, oh, that's really cool. You should just be called that all the time. And then I'd seen other artists like, you know, Jock and people like that who in the comic industry, and they have their own, like, you know, Matt Fraction, you know, it's not his real name. And I just thought, well, I'm going to call myself Snake because it's, you know, it's a kind of good selling point. People take notice of it as well. That's the long end of the story for that. Yeah.
Okay. As long as you didn't get bitten by a radioactive snake or something like that.
No, that'd be good, wouldn't it, though?
that's kind of old news by now, though, if you do that stuff. So, you've been doing one of the things I was interested in, I listened to some other interviews you've been doing, and you're interested in and you're lettering these days. And I always thought it's a good thing for a writer to be a letterer because you can take a second pass at stuff after it's all laid out and stuff, and you go back through it one last time. You can make changes to that. Have you found that to be true?
Absolutely, 100%. One of the other interviews I've been taking, I did say the same thing. It is just a really nice point that you have this connective tissue. You sort of a shepherd for the project. And I guess it's like being a producer in a film, you know. You overall, you overlook the whole project. So as a writer, I begin at the beginning with the story, with the foundation of the story. And then it's really nice after you've sort of handed over the reins to the artist to take his interpretation, to create, you know, his visual interpretation of it. But it's really nice to come back to you again as a letterer, and then sort of any, you know, I mean, you're trying to do as much minimally as possible. You know, the letterer should always be the is the kind of like the unsung hero. You know, if you notice a letterer's work, then he hasn't done it right. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But you know, and you don't want to take away from the art. You just want to help it when you know there's maybe something unclear, something that's wrong, whatever. Then maybe you just need to use your sort of lettering ability to just galvanize that together. But it's a really fine art. And I enjoy it. I do think there is an artistry to it. One of my big heroes is the letterer of Elephant Men. Richard Starkins. I mean, his mm-hmm. letters are nuts, like next level nuts. Awesome. He did Battle Chasers as well and things like that. And I use a lot of inspiration from that just to make it really big and to give a vocal quality to the text, you know, to really allow the reader to understand what that character's saying or in the scene or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, because the lettering is noticed when it's not right. If it's right, you just don't even notice it because it just makes the story flow along perfectly. But too often I sit and read stuff and I go like, ooh, it's like a roadblock. I keep running into it if the lettering is not good. So if you do it right, everybody doesn't even notice it. But that's the best way to do it. But it's kind of like editing because I'm an editor. Mm-hmm. Sure. When you edit stuff, you know, everybody doesn't notice because you make it flow right and you make it look good. And that's the thing about the lettering is the same kind of thing. I always say that editors like Batman, we prefer the shadows.
I used to live with three editors in a house in film school. So, you know, they were all sitting in their rooms just eating cookies and editing. But as a writer, it's funny. A lot of film people say that the closest thing to editing is actually writing. So there's an affinity towards those two roles, I think. And it's because both processes are a means of what to keep in, what to keep out, you know, what to edit, how best to tell the story. So it is an interesting thing. So, yeah, I have always sort of connected with editors, I find, you know. So, mm-hmm.
Well, my biggest problem as an editor is I'll watch something on the television and I'll be with friends and all of a sudden I go, oh, they spelled refrigerator wrong. and they go like, what? You know, you noticed that? I thought it's hard to turn that off, you know, kind of stuff. So, I guess. Now, before we dive into the book, I was listening in this other interview and you had because you're a spoken word artist. Mm. By the way, they had a spoken word artist who won America's Got Talent, I think, a couple of years ago.
Really?
I don't know if you're aware of that. Yeah, he was a black gentleman, and he kind of took everybody by storm because we hadn't seen all that stuff before. So it's kind of interesting. And the reason I bring it up, because in the other interview I was listening to, you had a poem about the four comics that influenced you.
Yeah, sure, I did.
I know I didn't give you any warning, but is that a bit? Would you like to go ahead and give us that here on this podcast so we can hear that?
Yeah, I'll spit some rhymes for you. No problem. Cool.
Okay.
Sure. So it's called A Life of Panels and Pages. I've been into comics since I was a kid, before this Marvel DC adaptation bullshit hit. Forget film and TV, moving images. It's all about the unified synergy of words and pictures. A literary super team-up, creating fictions to rapture imaginations. Through school uniform and black tie work, I've always had my head between pages, forged with the intelligent craftsmanship of artist, writer, creatives. These 24-page coloured bits of paper have shared space with me through the ages, but there are four landmark reads that bookmark my life in stages. The first comic I'd like to mention is the dystopian political page-turner Transmetropolitan, with a futuristic Hunter S. Thompson as its main character. I brought this comic with me, luckily, on hour-plus long-haul journeys to work as a customer service monkey at a call centre company the other side of the city. Cattle-cramped carriages and commuter silences faded into the background, with my imagination spellbound. Because these comics are more than just paper and ink. They're linked to a safe space where my head can think and wait for the darker things on my plate to dissipate. The second selection is a zombie survival saga of The Walking Dead, which swam in my slipstream across two different decades as separate reading events. I began reading this comic when my hopes of a film career got dashed, like the blood on the windshield of a car crash, and on the rebound found work at an obscene bar and grill team, whose employment stunk like a scorched earth slaughter regime. A neighbouring graveyard gave me garden harmony to sit and read on my tea break, my back sunk against the bark of a maple tree's trunk. Because these comics are more than just paper and ink. They're linked to a safe space where my head can think and wait for the darker things on my plate to dissipate. The next time I picked up The Walking Dead was a million miles from home, in Melbourne, Australia, on a working holiday visa on my own. I was stuck between the termite-crawling walls of a hostel, with new strangers coming and going with the consistency of a brothel. Each room had bodies piled high overhead, so I'd find privacy in pages with the curtains drawn to my bunk bed. Some nights I'd escape on the city's tramlines, comic under my arm, to meet strangers on dates and stay out till dawn's morning would wake. Because these comics are more than just paper and ink. They're linked to a safe space where my head can think and wait for the darker things on my plate to dissipate. The next comic book is the anti-superhero commentary called The Boys, which occupied a large portion of my young adult life, like background noise. I brought the first $2.99 issue on my first week of university, when the leaves dressed in an autumn-coloured burgundy. For 7 years, each month, this comic kept me company, like the clockwork visits of a separated parent, mindful of custody, through sandpaper breakups on campus halls, and through hangover wake-up calls on shared house kitchen floors. Because these comics are more than just paper and ink. They're linked to a safe space where my head can think and wait for the darker things on my plate to dissipate. My final comic is the fantasy western known as Preacher, whose sunburnt pages encapsulate the perfect story for any reader. I grew up reading this comic on my cousin's acrylic carpet floor after borrowing it from his extensive comic collection drawer. While him and his collective crew would play games of FIFA World Tour, I'd be left in the corner and ignored, a cast-out orphan but delving deep into this comic's allure. And as I grew older, my love for this comic endured. Reading it became an annual ritual of the tallest order. My usual plan is a Christmas read as the snow paints the land, wearing fingerless striped gloves to warm my hands. Because friends and relationships come and go, but comics have never left me in a park on my own. For a lone ranger like me, prone to isolation necessity, our relationship is a lifelong fixture. I can always curl into a corner with pages between my fingers, to be enveloped in a resplendent world of words and pictures. Because these comics are more than just paper and ink. Their panels and pages are synced to the lifeblood coursing through my veins, so we travel in parallel lanes, through the pain and mundane of the day-to-day strains, and journey forward through gale force future winds and rain, until the end of my life's reign. Thank you.
Very cool. Very cool. I really like that. We don't get enough of that, I think. We're so used to the visuals and stuff that we're not used to people actually doing. Do you get to do that much? I mean, as far as like people, is there much demand for that these days?
So there's a lot of open mic nights. I sort of started it when I was in Australia. There's a really good open mic scene with just poets. I lived round the corner from like a really good open mic event, cafe bar, and lots of really talented poets, a mix of just different people and stuff. And so I started really doing it there, kind of like a little bit more. And I met this girl who was a really, really good poet, and like she inspired me quite a bit as well. And then just built from there. And then I did a lot of open mics when I got back to London. And then now I'm in Manchester. I just, you know, if I've got time, I mean, comics take my priority. You know, this is, I love words. I've always written words as a kid. I've always been a writer. But, you know, spoken word, it's a bit of fun for me. It allows me to flex those muscles, playing with words and stuff. It makes me a better writer, comic writer as well. But, yeah, I try when I can go to open mic nights and just spit some lyrics. It's awesome.
Very cool. Very cool. And I heard you describe yourself once as a storyteller. That's a big deal for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I love story. The thing is, you know, people are really obsessed with adapting everything into film, to be honest, because obviously there's money there. But for me, like, I love every medium. Every medium has strengths. Comics have strength because they merge both words and visuals together. Film is immediate and big and in your face. Books are an internal, interesting monologue where you can really get absolute character depth. Radio plays, it's all that's left to the imagination, so it can be anything you want. And I think, yeah, if you're a storyteller, you should be adapted and know how to tell in all different mediums. I think that's a very good strength to have, and that's one I try and sort of use. And
that's good. Yeah. See, well, that's the thing to do. And, of course, I've often said that people who work in the visual mediums make good comic writers because they think visually. And, like, you know, you write – as a writer, you can say one sentence, the building exploded. And then the artist gets that, and he's got to – you know, he can't just do one sentence. He's got to draw the building exploding and everything like that, which is quite a change. But as a writer, you have to visualize what's going to happen. And I heard you say something else, too, that I was interested in, that the oftentimes when you get pages back from the artists, they add something to the story that you hadn't conceived. And boy, have I helped out with an indie comic, and we used to get that. And when the pages would come back, because I was the editor of that comic, when the pages would come back, we would see things and go, we didn't think of that, but that's a great idea. So I understand you've had that experience as well.
Yeah, I mean, I really wanted to be a screenwriter, and I wanted to be kind of like a playwright, something like that. And then during lockdown, I just got really into – I'd always read comics since I was a kid, and I just started – I decided, screw it. I'm going to try and start making comics. And then when I get those pages back, and with the way the collaboration is, it's just so pure and brilliant, the collaboration between artist or artists and writer. And it just gave me the bug, and especially when, yeah, an artist would return pages back to me, and it would be better than what I'd written. There's like no better feeling than that. It just, yeah, it's complete like cohesive synergy of an idea, absolute synergy of an idea. And you know, at that point in time, you pick the right person who gets your vision and is able to step it up and do even more. Yeah, so it's good.
That's great. Because, well, some writers aren't that way. Some writers want, you know, when words drip off their pen, that's gold, and everything should be exactly the way that they want. But I think the collaboration between writer and artist makes a comic better, not worse. So I'm happy to hear that you had that experience.
Yeah, I'm not in the whole Kevin Smith way of writing. I think there's an organic process that happens there between director, actor, and writer or writer and artist, you know what I mean? Like all of those kind of collaborations, just there's something that needs to happen in between those gaps that'll just, if you're open to what can happen, then I think you're going to make something far better, like lightning in a jar, you know what I mean? You're open to things happening.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No question about that. Now, The View of the Phoenix Trees. Now, that's a Kickstarter that's going to start in mid-September. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. It's by that point, I don't think it'll probably be my second published comic. I've got another one that is coming out a little bit before that. It's a horror. But yeah, this is going to be with a different publisher. And yeah, really hopeful about it. And I'm really happy to do it. It's a bit of a passion project. I guess everyone says that on here, you know, oh, comic, a bit of, but you know, it is. I mean, they usually are, because we love comics, all of us.
All right. Before we dive into the one that we're going to talk about, what was the one you said that this is your first comic is going to be what?
Oh yeah. So I've got another one called Monsters in Your Head, which is a horror comic. It's published by Blood Moon Comics. Basically, little girl called Whitney Dangerfield, and she has, am I allowed to swear or should I not?
Probably not.
No, okay, that's fine. And she has the worst superpower. She has the worst superpower ever. Whenever she gets scared, or whenever she imagines monsters, they appear and they terrorize the living nightmares out of her. But she has a best friend called Gigglebury, who's a giant hulking H.P. Lovecraft monster, and he protects her. And it's little girls, monsters, and yeah, that's what the comic is. Very different from this one.
And that's already out by the time the Kickstarter hits?
Yeah, it's coming out. My release date is October time. I think sort of late October time for a first issue, and then it'll be another issue will be released in November and then December as well.
Okay, wow. Okay, very good. Now, the view of the phoenix trees, I always want to know where things came from. What are phoenix trees, just so I know?
Sure. They're a type of tree, plant, that's in Vietnam. It's very beautiful. And the reason why, it's called phoenix is because it's kind of red or it has an orangey tint to it. And they're just a really striking image. And when I was coming up with the idea for this, that was one thing that sort of leapt out at me. And I wanted to keep using that imagery. And then obviously it kind of meant more and it visualizes family unity and stuff like that. So I kind of used it in the title because it's just, my artist, Hernan Gonzalez, his artwork and Damien Felite, the colorist, they're really pushing the plushness of the, of that tree. So it's a really iconic image all the way through the comic. So yeah.
Okay, and my understanding is that this is a semi-autobiographical book?
Yeah, so basically I'm half English, but then quarter Vietnamese, quarter Chinese. And it basically follows, it follows my grandparents meeting, creating a family, and then living through the Vietnam War. And then because my grandfather was Chinese and my grandmother was Vietnamese, because there was a falling out between China and Vietnam, everyone who was Chinese got kicked out of Vietnam and likewise for China. So there was a mass exodus from there. It's well known that a lot of people had to emigrate and leave. It was sort of a mass exodus. They're called the boat people and they had to leave Vietnam. And my family was part of that. They lost, a house, farm. They were quite well-off families. They lost everything. They had to go live on a boat for 6 months going to Shanghai. The boat, my grandmother got ill. The boat had to stop. And they were put in sort of a refugee camp in Macau for another 2 years until finally settling in the UK. And so those sort of realistic events that happened to my family. And this is a story that I kind of grew up with. I would always hear it from my mum and other relatives. I decided to use that story and put it in this comic. And then also alongside that, the fantasy elements, we tell the retelling of the Vietnamese creation story with Lac Lang Quai, the Dragon King, and his fairy princess. These two characters kind of mirror the actions that my grandparents take in their realistic story. But yeah, that's kind of it.
Okay. And my understanding is this is the first of 4 issues.
Yeah. So it's a mini series. So 4 issues. Each one is sort of based around a specific season because of the sort of elemental nature of the story. Each comic takes place in that season as well and kind of mirrors the vibe and feeling of like each season as well. So yeah.
Very cool, very cool. Now, my understanding is, because I've heard other interviews that you've done, you didn't talk with your grandfather about this. You got this through your parents and stuff. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's a kind of interesting thing. The idea, it's where kind of like reality and fiction kind of meet, because obviously all the events that from my grandparents' story, not the fantasy creation story with the Dragon King, but those elements are all real and really what happened to my family in the last, 80 years and so. But all the characters, like including my grandfather, that I didn't know my grandfather very well because he didn't speak English and I didn't speak Vietnamese. I just have fond memories of him sitting there playing cards, smoking, and then him just smiling at me. But and then other elements are like, so my grandparents, they have in the comic, they have 4 siblings, they're 4 children. But in reality, my family is massive. So like my mum has like 20 siblings. So, and obviously that's impossible to put in a comic. So a lot of the characters and the people, they're amalgamations and they're kind of like creations of my own, of my personality, of people I know, things like that. So it's where sort of, the fiction and the reality kind of merge together. But it's just, it was necessary because I don't speak Vietnamese. So I don't know, I know immediate family very well, but not distant family. So it was kind of, I had to use my own imagination for a lot of it as well.
So you haven't been to Vietnam then?
No, I have been Vietnam. Yeah, a long time ago, but I was there 20 years ago, actually.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's weird as well because like now it's like a tourist spot. You know, people go traveling there. You know, it's one of the spots. You go to Thailand, you go to Vietnam. But when we went, it wasn't, and it was kind of a third world country still. And so, you know, people, especially people in the north, in Hanoi and Haiphong, I mean, not in the south particularly because they're used to kind of white people, but in the north, they've never seen a white person before. So they're following me and my dad around. It's very different climate than it is now. Yeah.
You mean as far as when you say climate, you mean it's more hostile toward for outsiders?
No, not all that way. What I mean was what I really mean is that it was far more of a the economy's come up and it's more open now to the rest of the world. Whereas before, I don't think a lot of people had gone there. So a lot of Vietnamese people weren't exposed to sort of white people, to things like that. It was a little bit, especially the north anyway. That's all I'm saying really from that. So it's just a different place to go. It had a different vibe to go to, actually. It was a bit more of a jewel, an undiscovered jewel, as it were. Now it's sort of quite commonplace, I think. But you know.
Oh, wow. Interesting, because I've always been intrigued by that part of the world, although I know almost nothing about it. I was telling you before we started recording, there was a book I came across that interested me called Vietnamerica. It was written by G.B. Tran, and I really liked it. I was in San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm walking across the floor, and all of a sudden I look up, and there's this booth, and blazoned across the top is Vietnamerica. And I went, oh, I know that book. And I ran up and I said, I talked to the gentleman behind me, I think it was the creator. And I said, boy, I really enjoyed your book because I know so little about the culture. And not that I'm an expert or anything, but I really have a better understanding of the culture and the way of thinking and stuff like that. And what happens to Vietnamese people who come to America and stuff like that, which has got to be a huge transition for that kind of stuff. So I really enjoy that book and stuff like that. And your book, I'm interested to read it too, because I imagine I'll learn some more about that culture, because I don't think we know enough about that here in the U.S. So I think of course, you're in the U.K., but I think all our countries could use better understanding of each other. So I'm thinking your book is going to do a lot to help with that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I hope so anyway. I want to obviously keep it quite authentic. So I do a lot of interviews with my family, people like that, and I did a lot of research into it as well. So yeah, hopefully we'll see. But I mean, it's such a strange thing, sort of like creating a comic about this, but then also having grown up with this story, being told that, you know, family get-togethers and things like that. So it's kind of interesting that way. So it's been enjoyable to sort of go back and visit. And I've sort of connected. I'm not that close with my family. I mean, it's fine. I know some people and things, but there's such a big family. So it was quite nice to connect with it. Using this story to get in touch with certain people that I normally wouldn't have. So, yeah.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Are they aware that you're making a comic book?
My parents are. Okay. I think my cousin, he lives in Japan at the minute. So he's coming back to the UK soon. So I did inform him and let him know. But I have so many cousins and so many aunties and relatives. So, They don't, but I'm sure my mum might tell them maybe when it gets released or something. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see.
Well, I'm curious because, you know, the Japanese culture, manga is a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, over there. How do they view comic books? Do they view it like the Japanese do with manga, or is it kind of out of their purview? How do they look at it?
Yeah, I don't think it's a thing. It's certainly not like manga in terms of Japan at all. Yeah. I mean, I went to Japan a couple of years ago. Well, once again, about 15 years ago, I went to Japan. And yeah, it's just all over the place there. Whereas Vietnam, it's not really a thing particularly. I guess they get imports maybe from America or from Japan. But yeah, it's not really an industry there as such for it.
Okay, well, you're a trailblazer as far as that kind of stuff goes. Maybe that'll encourage some more people to take a look at comics over there, because we can use every comic reader we can get these days for that kind of stuff. So that'll be good. Now, something else I understand is that you've got a soundtrack for this comic.
Yeah.
Talk about that and how that came to be, if you would.
Yeah, I've had some really awesome moments reading comics when I've had some, like, you know, a really good song on, a really good soundtrack, a really good album on. And I'm a big music fan. I don't write music at all, but I've always got headphones on around my ears. So I'm always, and, you know, they're a big inspiration. Music is a big inspiration for me when I'm writing comics, when I'm writing any kind of story or anything like that. So, and I, you know, I don't think I'm a trailblazer or I'm starting something new. I know that comics have already have included soundtracks with them already. But with this comic, I just thought it'd be a really interesting thing to sort of include a soundtrack to really galvanize the mood for a reader, to really put you into the story world. So you're really engrossed in it. So I contacted a guy called John Piper, and he did sort of a short little soundtrack for the first issue for me. And then hopefully when we create the second and third and fourth, we'll do another soundtrack for them. And you don't get a CD with it, but it basically has a sort of a link in the credit page to SoundCloud. You can just type in the link and then you can play it while you're reading the comic, and I just think it puts you in that place where the story is. So yeah, I'm excited about that.
Because there was a book, and it's a long time ago now. It was a book called Nexus. It was done by Mike Baron and Steve Rude, and they did two issues black and white, and then they did a third black and white. But what they included was like what they called a flexi disc, where they actually had music they had done, and they actually voiced the characters that were in the book.
So
it was very much of a soundtrack for the issue. That's the only time I've ever seen that really. Some people put out playlists to listen to when you're reading the book and stuff like that. But that was the only time I ever heard somebody like, although now there's lots of podcasts where they do dramatizations of things like that and provide music. But that was the first time I ever came across that. Of course, that was in the days of record players and stuff like that. So you this little disc, you'd put on a record player and listen to it as you went along. So I like that. It harkens me back to those days and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. Now, I did want to ask you, who's the artist for this book?
Yeah, so I've got two artists. So it's Hernan Gonzalez, who's the sort of the inker and the penciler and sort of all the lines, basically. And then you've got Damien Lafitte, who's the colorist as well. And it's sort of like a very realistic kind of like style, but then the colors are quite overt and quite kind of plush and neon and kind of like quite pop arty in that sense. And then also, because obviously we're telling two different stories, as I've told you, telling this fantasy story about the creation story with Dragon King. And then we're also telling my grandparents' story. Those are the artists I've just mentioned. They do the grandparents' story, so it's very realist and very kind of natural. But then you've got Andrew Drillon, which is another artist I'm working with, and he sort of is doing the pages with the Dragon King and Lachlan Quire, and that's far more stylized. It's big, plush, kind of like splash pages, where, you know, there's no kind of panels, they're kind of all bleeding into each other, just to give you that kind of difference of storytelling, you know, to really emphasize the styles, the different styles, the different stories.
So how did you come across these artists? Did you find them online or what?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Hernan and Damien, because I did the first 10 pages of the comic already. I already did that as a small sort of taster and then threw it out to quite a few different publishers. And then obviously Edge Comics got back to me and now they're my publisher, and my publisher's called Chance and they do that. So I met them online. I mean, you know, Facebook's probably the demon, the devil, but also at the same time, it is a good tool. So you've got all these kind of like groups where you know it's connecting comic writers with comic artists, and they've just been it's just been a brilliant thing to find. When I just went online and I found them, and then I've been able to connect with these artists. And some people, sometimes you kind of meet dodgy people, and maybe you give them some money and they don't do the work, and that's an unfortunate side of it. But then other times you're connecting with people who are who they say they are, and you're finding those fantastic connections. And Andrew, though, was an additional artist that we got on board later, but that's thanks to my publisher, to Chance. He just knew some people in the industry already who are, you know, working in the sort of the bigger companies like Image and places like that, and he just recommended him, and so we just contacted him, yeah, and he said yes. So yeah.
Very cool, very cool. Now, I'm going to include a link to get to the Kickstarter page. And this is the place right now you're going to sign up to be notified when it goes live. And so very important to do that. I've got a question. There's a piece of art that I see on the Kickstarter page. Are the two people, are they drawings of like your grandparents, the ones that are up above? Is that who those are?
Yeah, it would be. But that also, that sort of drawing, that's, so we also got some, three guest artists who are artists that my publisher once again also knows. And we got them to do some special covers. So the one that I think you're seeing, yeah, that would be my grandparents, their depiction on there, my grandfather with his hat. but they're, special kind of like, guest artists. So Stan, Yak, Jimbo Salgado, and Vincenzo Riccardi. If I can pronounce their names correctly, I'm terrible at pronunciation. But that's Riccardi's art. And yeah, he's fantastic.
The bad news about comics is we don't have pronunciation guides for people's names and stuff. I'm forever butchering it. If you've ever Bill Sienkiewicz, who for the longest time I had no idea how to pronounce his name, I called it Sienkiewicz because I couldn't figure out how to do it. And I finally went to a New York Comic Con, and there was a booth, and on the big letters above this booth it said Sin in small letters, and it had Kev in great big letters. Itch on the end. And I went, oh, that's how you pronounce it. Sienkiewicz. Okay, now I get it. But I guess that's why he did that, because so many people mispronounced his name. So I got a huge kick out of that and stuff. So I do have to tell you, your grandmother, have you ever heard of Michelle Yeoh, who does, she won an Oscar, I think.
Yeah, sure.
She reminds me of her very much.
Okay. Yeah.
Very cool. I mean, maybe it's just my lack of exposure to people from that culture, but she looks so much like her. It's interesting to me.
No, I can see it. I can totally see it. Yeah, absolutely. What we're hopefully going to do as well is, you know, at the end of the books, obviously I like to give readers some extra info and bits of additional content. So hopefully maybe I'll give you some sort of character designs, but then also rough sketches, but then also like real pictures of who, you know, these characters are based on. Because obviously I've got quite a lot of, I collected quite a lot of pictures from my family, just so I could, you know, make sure it was a bit of an accurate representation of my grandparents. So, yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Do we see other members of your family in this book as well?
But they're kind of amalgamations, as I've said. Like, there's one character that's kind of based on my mum, but she's loosely based on my mum. But, you know, I think my mum, she went to like a Russian ballet dancing school. So one of the characters, she likes dancing, and you see her dancing in some of the panels and pages and things. But yeah, the four kids of my grandparents, so that's like one's based on my mum, one's based on her brother, things like that.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, you don't put yourself in there, do you?
There's a kid character who's, I guess, kind of based on me, who opens up the book and tells kind of the story. He's kind of like, you know, third generation, kind of like myself. And you'll see. Yeah. I mean, it's weird. As I said, the, what's real and what's fictionalized, but it's kind of based on me, I suppose.
Okay. Now, I'm always interested because I know a lot of people listen to the podcast who want to make their own comics. And I understand this is you're using Edge Comics for this one. How did you come across Edge? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, because everybody does this, you have to submit your comic to different mm-hmm. companies to yeah. try and get the publisher. How did you come across Edge? How did you hear them?
I think they posted something on like Facebook, I think. And it was just they were looking for stories, and I'd been posting quite a lot to lots of different companies, you know, Image, all these different publishing companies, and they just took an interest. And I was sort of and it's been a really, really good relationship so far. They're very supportive. And as a writer and a creative and the person who's kind of like, this is my project and shepherding it forward, it's really nice to come across a publisher like Chance who just helps you out. They're always interested in my ideas, and they organize these interviews. They've obviously organized some of the other artists for me. It's just so helpful because, you know, you're stuck in a room by yourself just writing. And it feels like, you know, you're pushing a boulder up this hill, you know, like, you know, the Greek fables. So yeah, it's just been really good that way to have someone in my corner backing me.
See, that's one of the tough things about being a comics creator is you end up doing a lot of the writing and the, even the lettering and stuff like that. You're usually on your own when you do that, and you're never quite sure, is anybody going to really like this when I give this out to people? You know, then when you give it out and people actually say they like it, you breathe a sigh of relief that, okay, so all that wasn't all in vain. This is, if people do like my stuff, how about that? That's kind of great to see.
But you know what? But you know as well, I'm 36 years old. I've come to that point where, like, even if no one wanted to read my stuff, I'd still make it because I just love telling stories. And, like, it's also therapeutic for me. Like, I just need – it's a thing that I need to do, and it's like muscle memory for me. I've done it so much. But I just love the process of telling stories. So, yeah. But it's absolutely a positive that – all of these people listening and possibly will be buying my book and things like that. That's a lovely thing. That's a fantastic thing. But I also just, you know, I make them not only for readers, but I make them for myself as well. You know, not mm-hmm. too self, not self-indulgently, but, you know, just, you know.
But you've got the storyteller itch in there. You've got to tell stories no matter what you're doing. Even if you weren't doing comics, you're probably out there telling stories to people. Stuff. It's that thing that just, once you get the reaction, you know, you tell the story and people react, you get hooked on that reaction and you want to have more of that. And so that's how you become a storyteller, and comics can do that. But God, you know, the thing I hope that happens is, have you, how far along are you with the first issue?
I've had the first 10 pages done for a while. My artist, Hunan and Damien, they're doing some other pages for me now. They've been pretty busy lately, so they haven't been able to get back into it. But obviously the Kickstarter is happening soon, so they're doing pages for the pages. So we're about halfway through the first issue and looking to sort of, you know, complete that. And then, you know, the Kickstarter, we've got quite a low amount for the goal, but we do want to sort of raise as much money as possible. I mean, if we don't raise enough money for all four issues, then we'll just do another Kickstarter for them. But, which, you know, it'd be nice to get, you know, money for one and two, maybe more, but we'll just see, you know. Yeah.
Well, that's what most people do, is that they'll do issue one if they don't, because some people are good at it, you know, when it comes to Kickstarter. They are. Ron Randall, for example, is a terrific guy when it comes to crowdfunding. Just amazing. And he gave the advice that somebody told him, is that when you're out there doing these things, if you feel like you're doing way too much and you're driving people crazy, that's probably just the right amount.
Yeah.
Because people pay it, they have to see it, and so you have to get it out there.
I mean, it's not like, so that's another reason why it was really good to connect with Edge Comics, and they've kind of taken over the Kickstarter for me because I've never really done it before. So I've learned a lot from just watching what Chance has been doing for the Kickstarter. And also, you know, I'm not an advertising guy. I'm not a business guy. That's just not my wheelhouse. Obviously, I want to work on those attributes and get better at it. But, you know, I'm a storyteller primarily and first and foremost. So it's been really nice to have help and for them, you know, to take over and for me to watch and learn. And, yeah, Hopefully, I'll be running my own Kickstarters just by myself and for other projects soon.
That'd be great, because I remember I interviewed Joshua Williamson, who's a big writer at DC. He told me that half of his time was spent creating. The other half of the time was him looking for work so he could create. Yeah. So that's kind of how creators stuff do those kinds of things. It's the View of the Phoenix Trees, and it's going to be available on Kickstarter if they're around mid-September. If people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that, Snake?
Yeah, so my Insta would be snake87smw. And then, I mean, if you want me on Facebook, it's just my normal name, which is Scott Matthew Watson. You're going to probably post the link to Kickstarter with the View of the Phoenix Trees, aren't you, already? So those are my main two social media contact sites. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to disagree with you some on Facebook, because I've been all over the place in the U.S. And the greatest thing to me is to go onto Facebook and be able to catch up with what's going on with those other people in those other places. Because I used to belong to a church up in Maryland. Mm-hmm. And I just found out this past weekend they had a fire.
And that
$5 million worth of damage to the church. And I was like, you know, I'm glad to know that's terrible for that to happen. But I'm at least I know about it. So Facebook kind of helps me with those kinds of things. So
I mean, it's a great tool to use. But I'm just saying that, you know, when you're watching your phone – and you're watching Facebook. I mean, some people do that. And that's what I mean, the negative side of Facebook. I mean, if you use it as a tool to enrich your life, then it's good. But, like, I know it's very easy, slippery slope not to, and just to be using it too much and things. That's why.
I get a kick when you call it the devil. That makes me laugh. Because too many people do get wrapped up in social media, and they're not living real lives. They're watching social media to have their life, and that's not a way to live. I feel that way about television, too. We got to be careful not to watch too much television, because here you are watching people pretend to do things, and you're not out there living a real life. And so that to me is always...
Oh,
and just something quick, I'm always interested.
Quickly as well, can I just say one last thing as well?
Sure.
For the Kickstarter as well, one of the things I'm doing for that is, if any of any backers want me to write them a poem, obviously you've heard what I can write and what I can do, I will write you a poem, a customized poem of whatever subject you want. Give me 2 weeks to write it. I'll write it fresh from my own creative brain, and then I'll perform it to you. And obviously, there'll be one of the rewards on there, so you can pay for that if you want. So a little bit different from the usual rewards that are on comic Kickstarters. Mm-hmm.
I heard the one interview was asking you to write a poem about mangoes. So you're pretty much open to topics.
Anything, so. Whatever you want. I'll come up with something. I'll find a way of writing about it. No problem.
Well, Snake, it's great fun to talk with you again. It's the View of the Phoenix Trees, and right now you're just signing up for it. So there'll be a link with this interview. Make sure you go out there and sign up so you're notified when the actual Kickstarter begins. Do you think it's going to be 30 days for the Kickstarter? How long are you going to have that going?
Yeah, it basically is. It's going to be to mid-November. So, yeah, it'll be sort of 30 days, but pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so there's lots of good things to do it. Snake, I hope I get to talk with you again when you have other projects coming in the future, because it's a lot of fun to talk with you. I enjoy your creativity and all the different things that you do as a storyteller. So, you know, much success, and I hope we get to chat again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been brilliant talking to you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. From flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but it's a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.